Blog Talk Radio.
Here we are. Here we are. Here's for the people.
It's not like the future depends on it. But save the animals in the zoo. Call the chimpanzee, them a make big money. This is how the media pillages. On TV the picture is savages and villages. And the scientists still can't explain the pyramids. Evangelists making a living on the videos of ribs of the little kids. Stereotyping the image of the images. And this is what the image is. You buy a car, keep on stand. All of a sudden you are there in the Indiana Jones. And I keep all the gold and keep all the scrolls and even the bird bones. Some of the worst paparazzi I've ever seen and I've ever known. Put the words on this place that the world can see and it's all that we'll ever show. So the ones in the west will never move east and feel like we'll be at home. Get tricked by the beast, but the way them a go flee when the monster is fully grown. Salamonic lineage where them two can defeat and them could have never clone. A spiritual DNA that prints in my soul and I will forever own, Lord.
Yeah. So Bali, that's patience. What the old folks told me. Can you get with that? Discovering a world before this world. A world buried in time. Uncovered with rhyme. It gets no realer.
We born not knowing. Are we born knowing all? We growing wiser. Are we just growing tall? Can you read thoughts? Can you read palms? Can you predict the future? Can you see storms coming? The earth was static, you went too far, you would fall off. Now the earth is round, if the shape changed again, everybody would have thought lost. The average man can't prove up most of the things that he chooses to speak of. And still run research and find out the roots of the truth that you seek of. Gotta teach in universities and claim like they're smart and cunning. Tell them find a cure when we sneeze and that's when their nose starts running. And the rich gets pushed up when we get cut. Wanna heal them broken bones in the bush with the wet mud. Can you read signs? Can you read stars? Can you make peace? Can you fight war? Can you milk cows even though you drive cars? Can you survive against all odds?
Truth. You don't know how they gonna react. You're scared of wrongdoers. People that's just ignorant. You're scared of the truth. Be patient. For now. Who wrote the Bible? Who wrote the Quran? And was it a lightning storm that gave birth to the earth and then dinosaurs were born? Who made up words? Who made up numbers? And what kind of spell is mankind under? Everything on the planet we preserve and can it. Microwave it and try it. No matter what, we'll survive it. What's you? What's man? What's human? Anything along the land we consuming. Eating, deleting, ruining.
trying to get paper. Gotta have land, gotta have acres. So I can sit back like Jack Nicholson, watch niggas play the game like the Lakers. In a world full of 52 fakers, gypsies, seances, mystical prayers. You superstitious, throw salt over your shoulders, make a wish for the day, cuz like somebody got a doll of me. Sticking needles in my artery, but I can't feel it. Sometimes it's like part of me, but I got a real big spirit. I'm fearless, I'm fearless. Don't you try to grab hold of my soul. It's like a military soldier, 10-7 years old. I held real dead bodies in my arms, felt their body turn cold. Oh, why are we born in the first place if this is how we gotta go? Dang. To all the wisdom and knowledge seekers of the world. Sabali. Patience. Yeah.
Free the land. My name is Bumani Shakir of the National Ministry of Information for the Radio Public Africa, and this is the official Republic New Africa radio show. I'm joined by the National Minister of Interior, Akin Bekele, who's my co-host. Before I bring on the guest tonight, I'd like to read an excerpt from an old PG document that entitled Historic Foundations of New African Nation in North America. Land independence and self-government have been objectively sought by new African people ever since we were kidnapped from Africa and brought to the country as slaves. Many ran away and established communities in the woods, mountains, and swamps, armed themselves, and created bases in which they could operate to where other slaves might flee. Others organized rebellion, aiming at freeing slaves and liberating territory from which to build an independent state. The new African people who were forced to come to this land, new African nationalism was not taken lightly. Although brutally crushed, our ancestors continued revolting. Although sold down the river, they continued to escape. Independence to determine was what they wanted. The new African were, in effect, laying bricks on a foundation which later to become known as the Republic of New Africa. By 1660, the social practice and oppression laws of the emerging Euro-American nation had made it clear that Africans, free or slaves, were not to be permitted to join the new white nation. Despite vicious repression, the essence of our African culture survived and bound us strongly together as a new African nation that has endured up to this day. In 1865, the 13th Amendment recognized the freedom of new African people under international law. New African people have four clear options as to our political future. One, the right to return to Africa as we were the victims of warfare and illegal kidnapping. Two, the right to general emigration as our family are cruelly fragmented and scattered throughout the diaspora. Three, the right to self-admission as citizens to the United States and strive for a multiracial democracy. And four, the right to remain on this soil, negotiate Native American and establish our nation in an independent territory where we will find ourselves on soil claimed by the U.S. in great numbers, severe homeland ties. Clearly, the right to self-determination was available under U.S. law. But the 13th Amendment to recognize the freedom of all New Africans, it imposed no political conditions whatsoever on a newly freed slave and contained no statement of citizenship in the American community. In varying degrees, each of these options were to be exercised by various sectors of the new African nation. At no time, however, was a national plebiscite, a people's vote, held to inform our people of these options. So collectively, a choice could be made. But 100 years after 1865, new African nation were kept alive by a succession of dedicated nationalists led by Henry Adams, whose movement sought independent land anywhere, by Benjamin Pop Singleton, whose movement went into Kansas, by Edward McCabe, whose movement went to Oklahoma, by Marcus Garvey, Noble Drew Ali, Elijah Muhammad, Queen Mother World, Malcolm X, and others. I also would like to share, this is a month of that filled with a lot of new African birthdays, people that are conscious citizens. The first date, I'm going to say 7/13, to commemorate the born day of Bobby Blair, Tuna Lee, who had been a country citizen in 1968. 7/14, commemorate by Watana Town Yebo, who's been a citizen since 68. 7/16, commemorate the born day of new era political exile of Cyrus Q, who had been seated in 68. And July 27th, commemorate the born day of Queen Mother Moore, the first sign of Dixie independence, and the founder of the Provisional Republic of Africa. And also, Noble Mention is for new African abolitionist Ida B. Wells, and which the district name out. Those are a couple of dates highly recognition and admiration of this month. You know, all that. Thank you, everybody who's been joining our broadcast. It's been broadcast. Thank you, everybody who's doing the work in the community. And this time, I'll let it welcome to the show, Sister Coco Thompson. Free the land.
By any means necessary. Free the land, comrades. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you doing tonight?
All right. A little recuperating from a long weekend, but I'm doing well. Thank you.
No doubt. I can sense me that. You know, first of all, thank you for coming to the platform, sharing out your understanding. Thank you for working on doing the past, present, and the future, right? For the people who are listening and the people who are going to be listening in the future, tell a little about who is Coco. Who is Coco? You know what I'm saying? Well, what are you involved with? What is your history? What is your origin? What puts you in the place you're at now? Tell us about a little bit about Coco. Give us a little brief bio of some of your cousins.
Okay. Where do I start? I mean, first, I would like to start with I am a conscious New African citizen worker, actively supporting the PGRNA and the current administration. Also an organizer with Community Movement Builders, as well as Black Alliance for Peace. A lot of my work pretty much stems from, you know, I have a history in organizing around New African prisoners' resistance struggles, supporting various New African political prisoners throughout the country. And in that work, I was able to learn about what it meant to be a New African and, you know, develop my consciousness as a New African. And that is what brought me into the current work that I do within the various formations that I'm a part of. I'm fairly involved. I'm also involved with Black Power Media, which is on YouTube. I have a show called Confronting Contradiction, in which I, you know, discuss various, think about, and then, you know, work toward, you know, challenging just some of the work that I do and I'm engaged in.
Okay. That's a mouthful. My first question is, tell us, before I get into the things I want to talk about, tell us about some of the sisters and whether the brothers throughout history that has influenced you on your journey historically.
Historically, there are, you know, various New Africans and Africans who have, you know, inspired me toward my work. I think for me, one of the earliest sisters that inspired me to think more consciously about, what is actually happening around us in our communities was Mama Asada Shakur. She was actually one of the first, her book was actually one of the earliest books that I read when I was in college. And it kind of, you know, led to a lot of me, myself challenging, you know, a lot of my own perspectives and the work that I, you know, engaged in at that time when I was in school as a student activist. And then later on an activist in, an actual, just before I became an organizer, right? And then eventually I started organizing, you know, various rallies and marches to protest police violence. But then I learned about Mama Safia Bakari, who was also a member of the a veteran of the Black Panther Party, the BLA, as well as co-founder of the National Jericho Movement. And her book, The War Before, was, you know, it has been fairly instrumental in my development, you know, as and a conscious New African citizen at that, right? And so I don't think I've recognized that, you know, but I, you know, continue to read her book. I've read her book, you know, almost a dozen times, you know, and I think that she was, you know, fairly instrumental in my development in thinking about the contradictions when it comes down to organizing and thinking about the internal contradictions as well as the external contradictions that exist, and, you know, has helped to shape me in how I, you know, organize, how I consciously think about, you know, organizing and, you know, and the type of organizing that I engage in, because not all organizing is the same. And so, you know, those are some of my earlier inspirations. Of course, later on, as I politically have developed, you know, there are scholar activists, revolutionary nationalists such as Emil Casabraw, Walter Rodney, Kwame Nkrumah. You know, there are, I could just keep going, you know, as far as a lot of the inspiration when it comes down to my own, you know, ideas of what it means to be a revolutionary nationalist and to struggle for lands and independence. And so these are, you know, not only are these people who put words into, you know, various formats and of writing, or even through speeches of, you know, even, you know, Brother Malcolm X, Elhaj Malik Shabazz. I'm sorry, I'm just, you know, tripping on my words. But I think for me, you know, these are our ancestors who actually put the theory into practice, who showed us what it meant to actually practice the various theories that are, you know, out here, whether it's scientific socialism, whether it's revolutionary nationalism, but how to, you know, shape my own thinking in terms of, you know, how I approach my own forms of revolutionary nationalism. And so those are just the name of few.
Okay, I appreciate that. Okay. What did the term free land and a country you ever see this mean to you? How do you internalize that?
Well, when I think about free the land, you know, I don't necessarily think about any one person controlling all the land, which is what we seem to see today in terms of how Europeans control most of the land. And through that, the land's appropriation and exploitation, they have been able to, you know, build empires through conquest and the enslavement of Africans. And so when I think about what it means to free the land, I don't necessarily just think about the land here in the United States, although that is, you know, where I'm located. So that's where I'm, you know, primarily focused on. But I, you know, recognize that land is interconnected. Us as people, us as African people, descendants of enslaved Africans, connecting that land struggle to the African continent and the various struggles throughout the African diaspora, whether it's in, you know, Latin America, and, you know, other global struggles of African people. And so when we think about land, you know, not necessarily, you know, when I, you know, freeing the land determines and enough to, you know, govern ourselves and, you know, be self-determined on that land and to think about, you know, having control over our own resources, over our own communities, our own labor, right? Like, you know, what builds wealth in for the United States and all other oppressor nations is the exploitation of labor, as well as the exploitation of natural resources, which is, you know, we are also a part of the land. You know, we come from the land. So, you know, all of this exploitation. And so when I think about free the land, it means to free the land, but also us as a people. And so, and then, you know, to think about being a conscious citizen of the Republic of New Africa, as a New African, what it means to be a New African. And when we look at that history, our ancestors were enslaved on this land, and, you know, our labor was exploited, obviously, and, you know, we have never received any reparation for that history. And as a conscious New African citizen, I, you know, understand that the history of the Republic of New Africa, you know, the ideological formation of this, you know, of the Republic of New Africa and the provisional government itself, thinking about our, like, according to international law, you know, we have the right to be self-determined peoples. And we've never, like I said, received any form of reparation. And so, you know, as a conscious citizen, you know, I believe it is, you know, as a New African, right, who knows that I don't necessarily have there's no legitimacy to the citizenship that was forced upon New Africans after the so-called Emancipation Proclamation that happened. And, you know, understanding that history, when you read a lot of the documentation, such as, I think, I'm sorry, I don't even have it in front of me, so I'm not going to speak to it, the title of it. But, you know, when you think about, you know, that history of not necessarily or the so-called second-class citizenship that, you know, many have said, and, you know, our ancestors, elders have said, you know, if we're not necessarily, we don't have any political power within the United States, and we have a right to be self-determined, we have the right to be organized, we have the right to self-govern ourselves. And so when I think about the formation of the provisional government, which is to serve as a governing body of the Republic of New Africa, I think about what it means to, you know, determine our own laws for ourselves, right? After we, you know, think about, you know, the lands that, you know, we should, if you think about why the five states, you know, why there's a claim to that land, as said in the Constitution, you know, what those five states represent, who has occupied those five states historically, and the obviously the enslavement of Africans predominantly within that this territory of the RNA. As a conscious New African citizen, you know, I understand that history, and I recognize the RNA as a legitimate nation of people. And, you know, and so I also recognize as a conscious citizen that the provisional government is a body of a structure that can help support us as we transition into our, you know, our nation and you know, begin that process of self-determining for ourselves how we are governed and how we essentially should not no longer be, you know, subjected to U.S. law and the illegitimate law that has been forced upon us. I hope that makes sense. But that's what what I think about, right? We don't just become free. These laws just don't appear. And you know, when you think about historically treaties that that have been, you know, formed, not that the, you know, Europeans honor any of these treaties, but thinking about these treaties of, you know, what determines sovereignty and nations, and, you know, what gives that peace treaty, I guess you can say, some legitimacy is, you know, the laws of which, you know, you engage in. So I just think it's necessary as a conscious new African to put in that work within the land, and that comes in several forms, including self-governance. And I yield.
True indeed. I appreciate that response. It makes a lot of sense. My next question is, you mentioned reparations previously in this dialogue. Does the release of a cash New African citizen, U.N. political POW, and U.N. Political prisoners, a part of reparations in your mindset, or it is something separate?
So I'm just going to stop real quick and say that I heard your question, but it's very hard to hear you. It's a little low.
Okay, I'm going to repeat my question again.
Okay.
What I was saying, I said you had mentioned earlier about reparations. Mm-hmm. So I was asking you, is the release of all the cash New African citizens, New African POW, New African political prisoners, a part of reparation claim, or is it separate from your own viewpoint?
So we're talking about New African political prisoners and POWs. Is that correct?
Cash New African citizens. New African POW, New African political prisoner, is that a part of reparation or is it something separate?
Absolutely, it's a part of reparation. You know, I mean, we have to determine for ourselves, you know, what we are going to accept for, as, you know, a form of what forms of reparations we're going to accept. And I argue against narrow forms of reparations. I think a lot of times, people want reparations to be this lump sum of money, right? That's just going to, you know, we're all going to be free because we have enough money in our bank account. And a lot of times I argue against that just because the fact is that when we think about the centuries, right, and I'm gonna stress the centuries of enslavement that our ancestors experience. And then after the so-called emancipation, we are now newly enslaved people. We were liberated by our colonizers. We were liberated, right, from the plantation and, you know, pushed into under, you know, specific laws now governed by the neo-colonizer, which is the United States, and that this new formation called the United States, which was at the time the Union and, you know, and that manipulation, right? And so when we think about, you know, the prison, those who have been in prison within the United States, we also understand that to be a new form of slavery. And so that this neo-enslavement,
I said true indeed.
Yeah. I mean, so, you know, this is a neo form of enslavement. And, you know, we think about how many of our people are, you know, forced to abide by these laws and then now criminalized and forced into these new plantations, which we call prisons, or they call prisons, right? And so, you know, I feel like when I think about repair and when I think about what the true meaning of reparations means, you know, we think about reparations, we need the lands, but we also need our people, you know, to build these institutions and our labor power to build these institutions and our creativity and all of the things that have been commodified, right, and have been stripped and stolen from us as a people, as New Africans, including our people inside, right, so these prisons. And so when we think about what it's going to take to build a nation, it's going to take us as New African people, our brothers, our sisters, who are inside and out, right, to build the nation. So as far as reparations is concerned, you know, they have been profiting off of our, not only our enslavement historically, but our labor, contemporary labor, as well as, you know, profiting off of the imprisonment of our people as well as of New Africans. And then even being more specific to who a political prisoner is and who a prisoner of war is, you know, specific people who were fighting for the liberation of New African people who were in combat. And not necessarily, and to say, you know, who started what. I mean, we know who the aggressor is, right? We know who our oppressors are. So, you know, they refused to recognize that, you know, there were specific revolutionary elements that existed within within our struggle. And those political prisoners and those prisoners of war are being held captive. And they, you know, that's a part of, you know, how we have to look at it, that, you know, they're our nationals, right? They're our nationals, you know, whose legitimate laws do, you know, these, you know, are they being held under legitimate law? And to think about the legitimacy of whose law we're talking about, you know, if, you know, historically we were enslaved and funneled into this new prison industrial complex. But even, you know, POWs and political prisoners who, you know, argued that we have the right to self-determination, and fought for this right to self-determination, are being held captive, then, you know, it's due for the nation, the New African nation, to not only have lands as a form of reparations and independence as a form of reparations, but those nationals should also be able to come home to the territory and be able to build the nation. And I yield.
Okay, I appreciate that. I got one more question. I'm passing on to Ms. Bekele. Take it on further through the show. How is it important for us to support these catch New African citizens and New African POWs, New African political prisoners? Is it important for us to support them? And if so, what are some ways we can support them?
It's definitely important for us to support them. I think everyone has a different strategy and tactic of like what's meaningful work and, you know, whatnot. You know, I would say first, you know, write to these individuals, reach out to these individuals and find out what support they need. You know, that's one thing that we can always do. Because a lot of freedom campaigns need a lot of people and a lot of work. And I would say freedom campaigns are not easy. You know, you're, again, dealing with international law. If we're really thinking about international law, meaning the United States' law, if we're New Africans, and that the complexity of that law. And the continued complexity of that law, because they continue to rewrite provisions that make it more complicated and more difficult for someone to be released, whether it's through parole or whether it's through, you know, wrongful convictions and whatnot. And so I think a lot of freedom campaigns don't have enough people to do that research, to be able to you know, find these ways around. And I think that's typically the strategy that most people take. So, like, that's what I'm saying. Reach out to these individuals and find out how you can support them. But from a nationalist perspective, a revolutionary nationalist perspective, I think it's very complicated to, you know, support every campaign that's out there, because when we think about how many new Africans are behind the walls, and, you know, and I'm talking about, citizens, conscious citizens, I'm talking about maybe those who could be conscious citizens, but it's very difficult to reach them because of the way censorship works in the prisons. So I think that for me, from a revolutionary nationalist perspective, of a perspective from as a new African working to build a government, I think that's where it's at. I think the work that we do as new Africans to build a nation building is that solution. Because, again, like I said, when we think about reparations, when we think about once we have political power, what our demands are going to be. And our demands should encompass that release of our political prisoners and our POWs and our conscious citizens who don't belong there in the first place. And so rather than pleading to the oppressor and requesting the oppressor, you know, have some form of, I guess you can say, ethics, which I don't think exists. So you have to, like, have some form of, like, you know, I mean, it's not to say that it can't work, right, because we've seen our people release, you know, somehow, some way, you know, a lot of work that goes into these freedom campaigns. And by chance, sometimes we see our brothers and sisters who are released. But I think nation building is a bigger strategy that can be taken in order for us to have a legitimate claim that the United States is illegally holding people within their system that they have no legitimate claim or right to hold, because these laws that were originally created were never really legitimate in the first place, because at the end of the day, after the Emancipation Proclamation, we should have had that right to determine for ourselves whether or not we create our own nation of people, which we already had. It was already established. We existed, right? It was never honored. And so a lot of what I think from my understanding of history, we negotiated terms to join the Union or join the United States and become citizens, or somewhat forced at that point. Not necessarily like we all agreed. And then there was options to go back to Africa, obviously, Liberia and all of that history exists. But as a new African nation of people who were forced to join the Union, we never really had a chance to form our own laws and have those laws be respected by the colonizers. So I think that that's important to remember why nation building is a very important aspect to our struggle. And I yield.
True indeed. I appreciate your response. And I want to commend you for the work you're doing currently, work you did in the past, and have a bright future in regard to your work and achievement. Free land. And it's time to open the land so we can take our show further. Free land.
Antifana. By any means necessary.
Karibu. That's locking your line open, bro.
Free the lane.
My name is not.
How you doing, Ms. Z, my sister?
I'm all right. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Trying to make. I just want to thank you for being on our show this evening. And when you were giving us a brief synopsis about yourself, you mentioned about being an organizer, and I know for myself that is a tedious task to be done. So can you just talk about some of the ways that you are able to successfully organize, some of the things that you've learned in your years of pursuing it?
Thanks for that question. Organizing is not easy. It's probably the one area that, you know, I don't think that I will ever be an expert at, but I think that that's the point. Like, I'm a student for life, so I'm always learning, and I'm always trying to find new ways to think about, you know, how I organize, and like, what does that mean to be an organizer? And even just thinking about the various formations that I'm a part of, and the various, you know, committees that I join, and the various, just a lot of different things. And, you know, and sometimes I, you know, wonder, like, you know, what does it really mean to be an organizer, right? And I think some people have different definitions of organization. You know, and sometimes it's very colonized in our perspectives of like what it means to be an organizer. But for me, I think, you know, I think there's just a lot of work that goes involved is a major aspect, right? Because without the work, there's no practice, right? And so we have to be constantly engaged in some form of work. And so, you know, it could be, you know, there's various forms of work. I'm engaged in lots of different work, you know, areas of work, whether it's from propaganda to political education. You know, I'm engaged in, you know, administrative functions that, you know, we still have to be administrative, you know, at times. And, you know, but then again, it's the connections with people, right? It's sitting down every day and, you know, making these connections, having this dialogue, and then putting it in and really thinking about, you know, how do we grow and how do we move forward, right? Because movement is motion, right? And a lot of times we get stuck and we're not actually seeing any type of motion. And I think it's important for me to always think about how am I progressing my ideas? How am I actually thinking about what a contradiction is? And if I'm actually practicing, you know, this criticism and self-criticism, that means I'm open to criticism and I'm receiving criticism. And then I'm also giving criticism when criticism is due, which is not easy at all. Like, none of this is easy. But as an organizer, you know, it's also, when I say it's a difficult task, I think every day I say I'm going to just give up, right? But then I think about, I can't go back, right? My mind, the way I think, you know, I can't necessarily just reverse, you know, and then all of the work that I've done over these years and all of the sacrifices that I've made, you know, what am I actually, you know, going to give up? Like, I can't, so I have to keep moving forward. But as an organizer, I think that, you know, we can be involved in so many different things. But then making sure that we continue to connect these struggles, right? And all of my formations that I'm a part of, they're all different in some way. But then I find ways that I can connect those different struggles. Because at the end of the day, there's a primary contradiction, which is the the you know, U.S. imperialism and colonization of African people. And I connect all of the different formations together and find ways to make these what strengthens the work that I do, so that I can push forward. And so, yeah, you know, organizing, you know, is not just work. It's also study. You know, I have to study. I have to know what I'm actually working for. I have to know what I'm fighting for. You know, the ideological struggle, the politics in command, right? I don't, you know, I have all the answers. But the more I learn, the more things become clear. And that helps me to go in a better direction, right? A direction that I know that it's going to take us further than a direction that's going to keep us stalled. And I think when I don't read and when I don't study, you know, I spent years, like, I feel like, you know, when I had my son and I was going through a lot of, like, issues, mental health issues and personal issues, and I, you know, I obviously becoming a mother for the first time, I stopped reading. And my mind was just not in the right place because I just didn't have the tools to, like, really think about, like, what I was doing. And I remember when I started reading again and I actually started getting into study groups and studying and learning about everything, the progress that comes from that, you know, where I can actually take criticism and actually learn from the criticism and actually take self and have some self-criticism because of some of the studies that I've done and the things that I've learned and the growth that comes from that, right? So, and then even knowing what I'm engaged in, right? Like, how can I, you know, just because somebody told me that this is why I'm fighting for liberation of African people, or because I'm struggling for land and independence, like, it's not because somebody told me this. It's because I see the evidence for this. It's because I studied the evidence for this. And so I have a stronger argument. And I have a stronger practice because I know what I'm working for, and I know what I'm arguing for. And so there's that aspect of study. And then I think about the training aspect. Is such an important aspect, the physicalness of myself, the physical condition I'm in, the ability to defend myself, not only physically, but mentally. And the work that goes into that, how important and integral that is, right? And so that, as an organizer, these various different aspects of organization, right? And it's not only just that, but it's also the people, right? When we're organizing, we're not just doing this alone. I can't just be, you know, doing this alone. Like, there has to be some accountability process. And when we're in organization and when we're organized, whether it's nationally or locally, right, there's various ways to organize, and we should be organizing locally, nationally, and internationally. But we think about the accountability process. If it was just me and I just read a book and I just came to the table and it was just me and I just read the book and I have no connection to community, I have no connection to other organizers and other organizations, and I just show up and I just run my mouth, then where am I going to go with that? But if there's an accountability process, the process of, you know, where everything I say and I do is not just about me, it's about the people. The people are more important than the individual, as we say in our creed. Then that's what organizing is, coming together and developing solutions collectively, whether it's economic, whether it's political, whether it's social, cultural, coming together and developing those solutions. So I yield from that.
All right. Thank you for that in-depth answer. It sounds like there's a lot to do, as we all know. But I kind of just, I want to also understand with the different organizations that you're in, how do you find the time to get assignments done, tasks done, and still be able to feel productive in those organizations? Like, what does that look like? You know, juggling the other responsibilities that you have, because a lot of times I've seen through personal experience talking to other New Africans, sometimes there's always something that lacks. You know, you may be proficient at this and that, but then you have this third thing that falls by the wayside. So can you speak to that, and what's your method for being able to balance it all and then still feel productive in having forward progress in the organizations and in the structures that you move in?
That's a great question. Well, I struggle, not to say that I'm perfect, but I definitely struggle to balance, right? And I think balancing is such a I could do better. Right, which is why I have, like, my to-do list, and I'm, like, constantly writing things down, and my schedule is, like, you know, my self-discipline is so important in all of this, right, discipline. you know, because I think that, you know, it's important, right, that I put in this, that I do is my life, right? There's no separation. I don't know how to separate life and in this work, right? And so I don't have a social life because everything I do is work. And so those who I work with, I organize with, are part of my, I guess, my social circle, if you want to say, because that's what I do, is I'm an organizer, not just for my job, but my organizer with my life. I'm an organizer, you know, as a mother. You know, my child is with me when I organize. When he's not in school, he's with me, and that's it. It's us. that's it. You know, I've sacrificed a lot, to be honest with you. I've sacrificed everything, actually. I've sacrificed my family. I've sacrificed my relationships with my family. I've sacrificed, I've just given up everything, pretty much. I don't drink anymore. You know, I mean, I won't sacrifice my laundry, but that's, like, you know, such an important part of my life. But, you know, like, so, like, you know, obviously I find time for the things that I need to do, right? So, but at the same time, it's like when I'm not doing something that's an important household task, I'm engaged in some form of organizing. And so whether I'm on five to seven calls a day with these various organizations and formations and organizers and people that I'm, you know, engaged and struggle with, then that's the sacrifice I have to make. I might be tired. You know, I still get my sleep at night, and, you know, I prioritize certain things. But at the same time, that means that I can't go to watch TV. I can't go to the movies. I can't go to that party, right? Because this is the work that needs to be done, because at the end of the day, hated my life to struggle. And now some people may not see it that way, but I do also know what it was like to not necessarily be as engaged as I am today in the struggle. And I also see the progress that I've made from being so heavily engaged. So if everything that you want to accomplish, you have to prioritize these things. And for me, I prioritize, you know, the New African Independence Movement. I prioritize, you know, learning, and I prioritize, you know, advancing the struggle. So that is going to require that I put in all my time and energy into it. And then I just have to be really good at making sure that I accomplish what I set out to do. But then that goes into the accountability process of being an organization, to have people being accountable, but then also making sure that criticism and self-criticism are always at the forefront. Because I would rather people tell me that I'm messing up so that I don't mess up. I would rather people tell me that, you know, that wasn't the right thing to say, so that I can say better things next time. You know, because I want to be my best self. I want to put in my best self into this movement. And so that's just how I go into things. and being as intentional as possible is extremely important. And I yield.
All right, thank you for that. Appreciate that. I definitely agree with that, especially from the aspect of sometimes you have to, you know, sacrifice things. And I think a lot of times people unwilling to sacrifice cause a lot of stagnations and a lot of projects that need to get done. So I hear that, and I appreciate that aspect. At this time, I'm going to ask one more question, and then if there are any callers on the line that would like to ask a question of our guest, please press 1 on your phone at this time, and we will get to those questions after my next question. So, awesome organizer, we've heard. I was unable to attend personally, but I did know of an event that you just put on here recently in June, I believe. Can you speak to that and some of the lessons learned and just what that the event was about?
Sure, yes. So on June 23rd to the 25th, we had, meaning Community Movement Builders, organized a National Black Radical Organizing Conference. And the theme was Unity in Our Lifetime, connecting the national black struggle for self-determination with Pan-Africanism. And essentially when, we were tasked with this conference, I came up with the theme for the conference. And, I felt at the time that this was a very important topic to have a dialogue about, to have these discussions about. And I said to, my team, I said, I can't see us discussing anything else. If we're going to talk about something, we have to think about what unity in our lifetime looks like, connecting, the national struggle, right, for self-determination. And then connecting that back to Pan-Africanism and, what is Pan-Africanism? I think that is also a question that needs to be answered a lot of times. I think, people are confused about what Pan-Africanism actually means and that history and on the continent. But I think for this convening, right, of organizers from across the country, the so-called country, I think was very important, right, to really think about how we commit ourselves, right, to struggling for a liberated future. And now, when we think about all of the various formations and organizations that came to the conference, everyone has a different perspective of what liberation looks like. Not everybody agrees with independence. Or maybe they just don't know about independence yet, right? I think that's the mission we have to get people on, right? Like, what is independence and why is it so important? But I think that this was a really good opportunity for us to have these conversations, challenge existing structures, right, of power, and to think about transformative solutions or even, start that conversation about what a transformative solution might be. For new Africans. And I think, like I said, there was various formations there. Then, the Provisional Government, Republic of New Africa was present, not only myself, but we had invited Sister President Saa Ma'at to speak on a panel. We also had, various elders, whether from the Black Panther Party, the Black Liberation Army, Malcolm X grassroots movement. We had various organizers, whether from CMB, Black Workers for Justice. We had Black Alliance for Peace that was represented. We also had different workshops that happened throughout the conference. That were not publicized, but, also very important, thinking about organizing the Black working class, We had another workshop about artivists in action, using art and activism to build solidarity behind the walls, primarily focusing on New African political prisoners. So that was a really great workshop that I attended. And then, and then also More Than Faces and Bodies was another workshop that we had that was facilitated by a sister from AAPRP, which again was another formation that was represented in this. We also, we discussed students and movement and our revolution and thinking about, how important students and the youth are to our movement. And so that, was a part of the conversation, which way forward? How do we struggle ideologically? Was a topic. We discussed, confronting state terror and what does it look like to be, confronting this issue of political prisoners, policing, and incarceration. And then also thinking about what it means to, build base building and build mass movements. And then there was a discussion on, Black complicity in American imperialism, and that was a focused discussion, also connecting the struggle to Pan-Africanism, and as well as, the propaganda and how important it is to, think about these various aspects of, how our minds are, have been, the menticide, right, that's happening amongst our people and the propaganda that's infecting our minds. And then, countering that propaganda with our own forms of propaganda that's also equally important. And then also thinking about money and these nonprofits and having that dialogue as well and thinking about, is a nonprofit revolutionary? And if it's not, what purpose does it actually serve? So, it was really great. We had a couple hundred attendees to sign up and actually attend the conference, which was great. It was really important to get people face-to-face. I think that was another element that existed, that face-to-face interaction that we see that has slowly trailed off, especially since COVID and 2020. Face-to-face seems to be such a complicated issue, not only because of costs and resources and time and all of those issues that, prevent us from being face-to-face, but then thinking about how important face-to-face is and how we sometimes lack that in our movements and our organizations, and how much we should be struggling against that. That was the conference. It was really great. If you want to actually see and check out some of the panels, you can go to blackpowermedia.com on YouTube, and you can actually listen in to the various panels that happened during the weekend as they were streamed live. And so that was the conference. It was really great, actually. I enjoyed myself so much, and being able to bring various organizations and formations and organizers that together, right, and to see that actually happen in the flesh, I thought it was just amazing. But I yield.
All right, excellent. Yeah, I totally agree. Just off hearing that brief synopsis, it sounded like it was a great event with a lot of great conversations that were had. And so at this time, we would like to ask if there are any callers on the line who would like to ask a question of our guest. Please press the number 1 on your phone. So we do have a question from our panel. Excuse me, from our callers. And at this time, 901-480, your line is open for your question. 901-480, your line is open. Please go ahead and ask your question.
Free the land. How y'all doing tonight? How y'all doing? Free the land, Sister Coco. How you doing? Salute to you. I only have one question, right? My question is, I know that a lot of our New African people, we don't understand the definition of self-governance. We don't know how to self-govern and different things like that. So a lot of our people get it get the definition of what a people's government is and what that entails. So I would like to know what your views on what a people's government is. And I yield.
This is Lance, Sister Millie Queen. I appreciate your question. That is a struggle, right? Because I think, first of all, we don't know what it's like to have political power, right? Because of the United States and how politics and, you know, fraudulent politicians engage, you know, us, and how we don't necessarily have the capacity or the ability to engage in, you know, U.S. politics and again, don't have any political power. And if we do so have political power, which I would question, it's very limited. And most times, you know, the Black misleadership class is at the forefront of that. And that, you know, obviously is that integrationist perspective. Dominated by capitalist interests most times. And so I think the people have never really felt or understood what it meant to actually to take power into their own hands. And not this false, representation, right? Like, I think a lot of times we're not empowered enough to sit at the table, right, and determine for ourselves, you know, what's important for our communities. You know, how do we think about, you know, justice? How do we think about, you know, food and food sovereignty and security? What does it mean to, you know, be educated and have control over our own education? And so when we think about all of that and we don't have any political power, you know, all of those issues become controlled by those in power that have no interest in our communities. And the only interest that they have is, you know, capital accumulation. How can they profit off of, you know, of all of this? And so when, you know, you think about self-determination and a people's government being a government that's formed and governed by the people, that means the people are at the table, right? The people are at the table. They're at the table making decisions. But I think that there's more to that than just that, right? I think it also means that you're also in your community, right? And you are with your people in your community making decisions collectively, and then you take those decisions that you have and then you bring it to the table, right, collectively on a national scale, right? When we think about nation and national, we're talking about New African Nation and New African National scale. I just think that we've never really been educated politically to understand what it means to have, you know, to have political power, to actually govern. What is that process of governing? What does it mean to create laws, to develop laws, to enact laws, to interpret law, right? And I think everyone has their own interpretation, right, of that. But I think that it's really important to connect those, you know, to connect all of this to the material conditions of our people, right? If it's not connected to the material conditions of our people, if it's not actually connected to the people, then it's, I would question the legitimacy of it. But again, you know, that doesn't mean that everyone, you know, who, you know, has some, you know, it doesn't mean like everyone, it's not to say that everyone doesn't have a say, right? I just think that, you know, we have to be informed, and we have to help to inform other people about how do we begin that process and how do we actually engage in that process. Because I think everyone might be self-serving in their interests. And again, like, are you an organizer? Are you organizing? right? Are you in a formation? Are you in a unit? Are you actually doing the work? Because I think if there's more to self-governance than just saying, I know the law, and then expecting, you know, something from it. Yeah, so there's a lot that goes into that, and I yield.
I say, thank you, okay? Y'all have a great night, and that was a perfect answer to the question, and I yield.
Likewise, Sister Molly Queen. Thank you. Thank you, Sana.
All right. Thank you. Thank you again for that, Sister Miller Queen. So, again, at this time, if there are any callers on the line who have a question for our guest, please press the number one on your phone so that you can be recognized to ask your question. If there are any callers on the phone, please press the number one to be recognized to have a question for our guest. And at this time, if there's no other callers, I will pass it back to Oh, okay, never mind. All right. We have a couple of more callers who have identified for questions. So at this time, 901-570, your line is open to ask your question. 901-570, your line is open to ask your question. Go ahead.
Frieda Land, this is President Sama. I don't have no question. I just came in. I'm just saying, Frieda Land, greetings, y'all. Nice to hear your voices.
See the land. Yes, thank you. I appreciate you calling in. Hear from you.
Yes. All righty. How are you?
All right. Thank you for this. All right. Our next caller, 901-292. Your line is open for your question.
Free the land. It's Mama Ayo.
Good to hear from you.
Yes, I'm just calling in. I caught the tail end. We're still on the road coming from the face-to-face. However, I did want to, just express our sincere appreciation for being hosted in John Henry Clark District, as well as seeing our citizens come and participate, whether it was virtually or in person. Sister Coco, I have would like you to expound on when we talk about citizenship, if people make the conscious effort to become a citizen, what does the role of understanding what allegiance means? How is that tied in your mind, since you are in work, study, and training? How does that tie into the Declaration of Independence, the goals of the revolution, and of course going into the new African creed as well as the Code of Umoja? And with that, I yield.
I appreciate the question, Mama Ayo. Yeah, I mean, you know, I think, you know, for me, and I'll speak for myself, everything that I do, everything that I'm engaged in, I think, what is the most important struggle, right? And for me, that struggle is land and independence within a legitimate, which is a legitimate RNA, right? And so, for me, my allegiance, right, is to the building of a better people and a better world, right? My allegiance is to the principles that we find in the New African Creed and the oath. The aims of the revolution are these guiding principles that I read and I interpret, and I put that into practice in the various formations that I'm a part of, right? So it's what guides my work, right? The material conditions of the people, right, is what grounds my work. But what guides that work is the principles and the values that come from the foundation that the RNA was founded on, on, right? This foundation, right? And I think that, you know, the provisional government serves as that body, right, to help, you know, develop these laws, to develop the governance, right, that we need as citizens, right, of this land. Because I think without that, right, then there's, you know, this other form of, these forms of anarchy, right, that could potentially exist or, you know, and I think that we also have to remember or determine for ourselves what type of government we want, right? Because we could be conscious citizens, right? We can, you know, be, you know, but we also have to determine what is a revolution, right? What type of government, what type of new society are we looking for, right? And I think that our elders laid a foundation, right, that was revolutionary, that was, and that goes against the oppression that we experience, right, within this oppressor nation. And so all of the work that I do, whether it's locally or nationally, whether it's with other, with non-conscious, unconscious or non-conscious new Africans who do not may not recognize, you know, the legitimacy of the provisional government or the RNA or land, or may not connect to land and independence. But at the end of the day, the work that I'm putting into all of this is to connect those struggles, is to connect the struggle, all of these struggles, back to the land and gaining that independence. And so for me, all of my work is always going to tie back into that. My guiding principles, again, are, you know, derived from the New African Creed, derived from the aims of the revolution and the Declaration of Independence, and you know, and then what helped form the accountability process is the Code of Umoja, right? What is the accountability? And so, you know, for me, you know, to follow my chosen leaders and help them, you know, we might not all agree. That's okay, right? Because again, we have to work to, you know, to form a new nation, right? And so there might be differences and perspectives, and we all, again, like I said, we, according to our material conditions, we might have things that we've experienced, or you know, how I'm a mother. Not everybody is a mother, right? And so we might see things differently. But at the same time, if I separate the personality, if I take out my personality, if I take out, you know, my own self, my ego, I guess you can say, you know, and I focus on these principles, and I focus on the values that exist within this formation of the provisional government, seeking independent New Africa, then I will understand, you know, the work that needs to go into that and why it's so important to not shift, you know, that allegiance, right, to be shifty, you know, when I guess you could say when it comes down to, you know, what I pledge allegiance to, right? It's not, and again, it's written into the Code of Umoja, right, as a conscious citizen, that if I am conscious, a conscious citizen, then I will, you know, work toward these objectives, right, and support those elected and appointed within the government to maintain or, you know, keep in line these various principles and values that have been written in these various documents. So I hope that answers the question.
Yes, madam. Very, very good. Yes, I totally agree with you know, your analysis and your assessment. So from there, we just try to encourage every new African, potential new African conscious, new African conscious citizen, worker, new African, to unite, build units, build collectives, and begin to do this work of nation building and freeing the land. Thank you, Sister Coco.
Yes, yes. Thank you. Thank you, Carla, for that question. We appreciate all of the comments, questions for our guest for tonight. At this time, I'll pass it back to my co-host, Brother Bomani, so we can proceed with the show.
Free land, free land, free land. Well, I got one question, and ask Sister Coco for a final thoughts and Brother Aki for a final thoughts, right? I mentioned people missing their turn, heard the term Pan-Africanism, right? And like was stated, there are different perspectives of it. What is your interpretation, a recognition, a new a Pan-African from a new African perspective?
Yeah, no, that's definitely important question to ask. Thank you for your question. When I think about, you know, Pan-Africanism, and I even thinking about the new African struggle here, right, and its connections to the Pan-African struggle, right, it's fairly deep, the history, right? It's way earlier than Garvey, I would say that as well. You know, and what it means is that, you know, we struggle, you know, collectively as Africans, you know, throughout the diaspora, you know, we struggle to not only liberate all African people, but eventually unite African people. And what that looks like, you know, I think that, you know, can be interpreted differently. As, you know, not all African people and not all new Africans, you know, believe in the same thing. And unfortunately, there are many colonized African people that believe in some forms of liberation, but then still seek to either replicate the colonizer in their forms of everything, I guess you can say. You know, they still have colonized mentalities and perspectives, and I think that can complicate things, right? There's a lot of, you know, petty bourgeois African and capitalist African, and so I think that there also needs to be a class element, a discussion on class. That doesn't get discussed enough. Think about what Pan-Africanism means. But there is, you know, a unity process that should be had. But I think that sometimes, again, that could be too narrow if we're not discussing class. And so for me, as a new African, I think, you know, we have to fight here first, right? We have to be strong here in the imperial core, and all African people need to be strong where they're at before we can unite and determine for ourselves what unity actually looks like. But I think, again, as new Africans, I think you know, sometimes there are some folks that think, you know, it's the struggle is not here in the imperial core, that we have to go back to Africa and struggle there. And I support any person who thinks that that's required or necessary, because we need a strong Africa. Strong Africa means a strong world, right? When the resources are no longer exploited on the continent by these imperialist forces, when Africans can control their own resources. That means land, natural resources, including labor. I think that, you know, that determines a freed Africa, to some extent, but recognize that, you know, what happens here in the imperial court is important. It does affect us, again, you know, dialectically thinking about the material conditions of New Africans here. We can't just abandon them. We can't abandon ourselves, I guess you can say. And so that the struggle as a New African to struggle for land and independence here only supports the continent in their struggle for land and independence as well. And I think historically speaking, we have had, you know, our elders have, you know, waged this international struggle as well as the national struggle, such as Malcolm X when he went to the African Union and, you know, spoke with, you know, those brothers and sisters, I'm assuming, out there, you know, to, you know, unite and for them to, you know, think about that here in North America, so-called North America, that, you know, are only disconnected through because of, you know, the Atlantic slave trade. And so essentially we are all African people, right? And so we have to always remember that. And that's why I say we have to fight locally, nationally, and internationally. And so some may argue that we are all Africans. So technically, you know, we're no different here than we are, that our struggle here is no different than that of the continent. Which I would say that there are some differences. And once we have lands and independence and, you know, we can be better suited to struggle in the continent and vice versa. When we have a strong African continent, then they would be strong enough to support us in our struggle here. And I think that that's that dual relationship that is important, and not just here and on the African continent, but throughout the diaspora, which is, you know, Latin America, Caribbean, and so forth. So I think that there's just an important understanding that needs to be had, again, going back to this argument of class struggle, which I think many African revolutionaries and also new African revolutionaries have consistently, you know, discussed and struggled for, right, is to end class warfare, because I think that that is one issue that we sometimes fail to remember, that this is a class struggle as well. And I yield.
Okay, I appreciate that. What are your final thoughts you want to leave it with?
You know, I just want us all to, first of all, remember, this is a class struggle. But at the same time, I want us to also remember, like, that our work that validates us. It's our work that legitimizes our struggle. If we sit back and we wait for everyone else to do it, we're never gonna see any results, right? If we have to actually put in this work, we have to show up, right? We not only have to show up, but we have to know what we're talking about when we show up. You know, because at the end of the day, there are a lot of people that have been indoctrinated into the society, who are convinced that the society is, you know, if they pull themselves up by their, you know, bootstraps and, you know, they get, you know, a good paying job, you know, they're going to survive and whatnot. And we continue to cycle through these, you know, various decades and centuries of captivity, I guess you can say, because we don't necessarily have, again, we don't have any political power. We don't have any lands. We don't have control over our resources. We don't have control over our any infrastructure, you know, and how are we going to build any infrastructure if we don't put in work? How are we going to serve our people? And how are the people going to come if we're not actually putting in any work. And I just, I think I struggle with that part. Like, you know, what are we, who's going to do the work? You know, like, I mean, there's, you know, not to say that the infrastructure has been built by us already. So essentially it's how do we reclaim what has already been built? Yes. At the same time, we have to remember, you know, what type of people we are today, right? What are the conditions of our people today? You know, we might call ourselves workers, but what kind of jobs are we working in? We're working in retail jobs, and you know, we have so like what are our skills? We have to, you know, we have to develop skills to help, you know, manage the infrastructure that we have to provide for our people. You know, and that comes with education and health and all of the various aspects that we have to have if we are to build a nation, right? And so if we talk about building a nation, building is a verb. Building is work to revolution. We can't just talk our way to letting our giving our oppressors to letting us go free. That's not going to help us. Word salad, whatever you want to call it, is not going to do anything for us. We actually have to put in that work, and we have to know what it means to do the work. You know, we have to know what kind of work we're engaged in and why we're engaged in that type of work, that intentional work that we have to put in. And then we have to be trained to defend ourselves in various form of defense, and we have to be able to sacrifice and physically sacrifice a lot of things to be able to do the work, right? And so if we're not actually doing any of that, then it's not to say that your voice is not important if you're not putting in work, but I couldn't expect anyone to take me seriously if I wasn't actually doing any work, right? If I was just on Twitter talking, right? If I was just on Black Power Media, on YouTube, just talking, right? And then I go back to my life and I live my life and I go out and I do my own thing. But then I go back on TV and I talk shit and I get off TV. Who's taking me seriously? Are they internationally going to take me seriously if that's all I'm doing? Are they going to take me seriously, you know, at the UN? Are they going to take me seriously on the block if that's all I do, you know? So I think, again, work is very important and being organized and being accountable to something and somebody and various people, our people, New Africans, is really important. And to, you know, really understand what we're working toward. Right. What was the foundation of the provisional government? What were the intentions of the provisional government? Why do we have a provisional government? You know, so that when we actually gain independence, we're not just looking at each other and then we say, now what? Right. We've already been doing the work. Once we gain independence, once we have the land, we've already been doing the work. So it's not going to be a question of if we can do it. It's because we've already been putting that work into practice. So, you know, again, I'm going to stress work. And again, I'm going to stress class struggle because, again, this is a class struggle. We are not going to be oppressors just as we are fighting our oppression, right? We're not going to go and oppress other people so that we can have power, right? And I think that power struggle, still the ego still wants to have so much power that we can't see that we are a detriment sometimes to the work that we say we're actually doing. So just some observations that I have when I'm engaged in a lot of this work. And I would encourage all of us to, you know, think about how we're sacrificing, what we're sacrificing toward, and, you know, again, ideologically getting ourselves together so that we can be unified so that we can be unified. And I yield.
Okay. I want to thank you for that. I'm going to give my final thought. I'm a passionate brother. I can take us out. You know, Dr. John Clark said, whatever you do best, do it for the people. You know, and with that, I'm going to say that if you're a country New African citizen, tell every new African you see or talk to about New African Independent Movement, about the PG, spread the information, spread the propagation, and become part of the propagation war that it weighs against us. I'm going to say long live the resistance, long live the New African Independent Movement, free the land, Pastor Brother Hocken. And thank you again for coming to the platform. Thank you for the work that you're doing.
Thank you for that. My final thoughts, I just want to thank you, sister, for being available for the show. Thank you for all of the work that you're doing now, you've done, and will be doing. And I appreciate the conversation. It was just very, very interesting. And I appreciate everything that you're doing. I definitely agree. With the work that needs to be done, there has to come sacrifice. So I appreciate you for laying that out for everyone. And I also want to remind everyone that we'll be doing this radio show every third Monday of the month here on Blog Talk Radio. And if anyone is interested in learning more about the provisional government of the Republic of New Africa, we have several social media sites. We also have a website, pg-rna.com. Feel free to connect with us to learn more and to also request copies of this show or any other of our previous or past shows. Thank you all for the work. Thank you, everyone, listening. Free the land, free the land, free the land.
I mean that.
Much appreciation, comments.